an ethics complaint against Dick Lugar. What's the political effect? State senators endorse Wayne Siebold. David McIntosh takes on Planned Parenthood, and class basketball gets a statewide airing. That plus Rupert for governor, public art, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending March 30,
2012. Ice Miller. Proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, the Senate Ethics Committee was asked to launch an investigation into Richard Lugar's use of taxpayer funds to pay for hotel stays in Indiana. Lugar has admitted breaking Senate rules by staying at Indiana hotels when the Senate was in adjournment. The Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington wants sanctions considered both for the hotel stays and for travel expenses that it says are improper. The organization known as CREW compares the Lugar circumstance to that of former Minnesota Senator David Durenberger, who was convicted of using Senate funds to pay for his Minnesota condo in 1990. How will this ethics complaint affect Lugar's reelection bid? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Mike McDaniel. John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, is it safe to say that this has now taken on a scope that Senator Lugar never imagined?
Oh, I'm sure that's probably true. This is another example of a Democrat front group who's trying to embarrass the senator. The lady that's in charge of this group worked for Senator Schumer, who's already announced that they want to try to take out Lugar. If they get him in the primary, they're going to go after the seat. And this group in the last 60 days has asked for investigations of three members of Congress, Republicans, and both Mitt Romney and Newt Gingrich. So I think this is pretty much a Democrat group that's trying to embarrass the senator. It's one in many. And I don't think it's going to get much traction, quite frankly.
But he's admitted breaking Senate rules.
And he has. And he's talked about and he's asked them to go back and check all of his records, which they're in the process of doing right now. So he's asked that be done.
Is this politically motivated?
Whether it's politically motivated or not doesn't matter. He's admitted breaking the rules. And what you've got here is that first he was going to pay $4,500, which is a swag. Okay, he just decided how many years this had been in effect, and I probably stayed this many times a year. Multiply that out. That's not how you do an audit. And besides which, what I said at the time is that these were not properly.
He also turned it over to the Senate Disbursement Office to let them do their own audit.
Okay, that's fine, but it doesn't. I don't think this is going to. He admitted breaking the rules. I don't think he intentionally admitted breaking the rules. And whether he owes $5,000 or $10,000 or $20,000, I'm sure he'll pay it back. But what it does do is keep the story alive that tens of thousands of taxpayers' dollars went to provide him with beds in Indiana, the state that he supposedly represents when he moved out 35 years ago.
All right. Just today, Senator Lugar reached a settlement with the Marion County Election Board to clear up his residency questions, issues of whether or not he's registered to vote properly and if he can vote in the May primary. So he's got that behind him, but still can't clear the board here.
Well, it's behind him technically, but you can darn bet it'll be used in the campaign into May, and if he's still a candidate after that, it'll be used through November. And really, Jim, this is exactly what you're saying, is that he's got these problems. These are problems that he wouldn't have had before, and they're really kind of it's the interesting thing about these problems is that they keep cropping up, and as they do, they point back to the central theme that Murdoch's been hammering him on, and that is that he's been in the Senate for so long. So it really just seems to have a momentum of all of its own, and he gets one problem picked up, fixed, but it's still going to be used against him going forward.
So last week we talked about how there's a need for Senator Lugar and the Lugar campaign to change the conversation here. The super PAC that's supporting him has come out with a negative ad now that attacks Chris Ciccola, the former Indiana congressman who's the head of the Club for Growth, and ties Ciccola to Richard Murdoch. It seems like he's having trouble changing the conversation.
I think you could make that argument, and you just did. and I think there is something to that. It's not one of the reasons this other issue, as John points out, has resonated. It's a simple. I mean, there are a lot of nuances about the whole residency question, but in the minds of a lot of voters, it's as simple as an issue as they come. Boy, he doesn't live here anymore. He's out of touch, and he's using tax dollars to stay here in, you know, a hotel. I mean, it's pretty basic. It's a lot simpler than talking about whether or not you support presidential nominations to the Supreme Court, or whether you what your tax policy is, or what your foreign take on foreign affairs is. This is simple, and it couldn't have unfolded probably in a worse way if you're the Lugar campaign, because of the way this has been so episodic. With a little chapter here, and then another chapter here, and another chapter here. And he has tried to change the conversation to your question. I mean,
right.
We saw the release this week. It was on the Supreme Court oral arguments, and the campaign came out with, taking the liberal justices to task to try to address that.
He's trying to make the point that he was against Obamacare early on.
Yeah.
But this whole campaign is about Richard Lugar. There's very little discussion of Richard Murdoch and his
record. His opponents, both Republican, Democrat, and special interest, are going to keep these kind of issues alive throughout this campaign because they can't compete with him on actual issues that America's dealing with. And so there's nothing, no value in that, and for the very reason that John just stated. These are simple, and they're not hard to explain. They don't want to talk about the issues of the day. They're not going to. So this will happen the whole campaign.
Actually, Democrat Joe Donnelly next week is going to come out with a jobs program. He wants to talk about issues, but wouldn't he be better off just to keep quiet at the moment?
I think he's right to put his platform out there, because obviously he's going to be the Democratic nominee regardless of who the Republicans choose. But I think what's really interesting about this is that Beth White was able to step forward and work out an equitable resolution of this. You can laugh all you want.
Well, I will
he
laugh
abandoned,
because they
he abandoned. I'm going to finish making
they
the
gonna
point.
Lose.
I'm going to finish making the point. They were not going to lose.
Yes, they were.
She abandoned that house 35 years ago, and it doesn't fit with the Indiana Constitution. But she worked out a way that he can vote in the election
by registering to the farm that he's owned.
Well, that's
than 35 years.
That's fine.
It actually seems to be a pretty simple answer.
It does, which is why you wonder why the senior senator didn't think of it.
Yeah.
All right. A group of state lawmakers got together this week to endorse Wayne Siebold. Siebold is currently serving his third term as mayor of Marion, but he's running for Indiana's 5th congressional seat. State Senators Mike Delf, Luke Kenley, and Jim Buck were there for the announcement. Siebold is one of 7 Republicans running in the 5th district. He hopes to succeed retiring Congressman Dan Burton, who, by the way, has also endorsed Siebold. And Delaney, what does that endorsement tell you?
Let me see the headline here. State senators in suits from safe districts support Siebold. Really shocking.
Wow.
But regardless of that, and by all intents,
but
I don't know Mayor Siebold.
They had 7 choices.
Right. I don't know. Well, they realistically had 3 or 4 choices. But nonetheless, I don't know Mayor Siebold. By everything I've heard, he's a good public servant. But when you have 5 guys in suits and 1 Susan, I would put my money on Susan Brooks. And the only one enjoying it more than Susan Brooks, it seems to me, is Scott Reske, who is the Democratic nominee from that district. And that food fight among the Republicans must give him a good chuckle.
Scott Reske's still complaining about the fact that Burton quit, right?
Yeah. Scott Reske, first of all, has no chance of winning this district. This is a very Republican district.
That's what you said
district.
About Obama carrying Indiana last time.
It's true. He
That's
can't
what you
win
said
this
about
district.
Obama
you won't
Indiana.
Win this district. You won't win any of these districts, okay?
We'll see.
You know that deep down inside.
Yes,
you do. Come on. Siebold
was late getting to this race.
This is a good endorsement for Siebold, and the reason is these 3 members of the legislature have watched Wayne Siebold, who's probably one of the best mayors in all of Indiana, and has worked well around the State House for a number of years for mayors all across the state of Indiana. So these guys know him. And this was a powerful endorsement for him because each of them has shared part of this territory at one time or another or represented part of it. Now, fortunately, this is a Republican district, a very Republican district. We will have a good member of Congress come out of this because we have
so many.
We have so many good candidates. Susan Brooks, John McGough, you know, Dave McIntosh. I mean, it goes on and on. So we're going to have a good congressman here. And it's, this is a seat
like
we'll
said,
have for decades.
From that district.
Yeah. State Senate members endorsing somebody doesn't get you anything.
Sure does.
It's been amazing to see how many in the battle of the endorsements in this race, and I guess it's not surprising because they're all trying to prove their bona fides as the real Republican heir to that nomination. So you've had, you know, Dan Quayle weighing in, any number of people weighing in, some who are more involved in Indiana politics than others. To the extent that these are individuals who are involved on the ground in that district, it's probably more valuable than some of the other endorsements that have been offered thus far. But we've talked before about how that district changed after, you know, it's not the district that necessarily elected Dan Burton year after, or every 2 years.
It used to be considered the most Republican district or the second most Republican district
It is, but it is still Republican, no doubt about that, still conservative, but the geography is different. It's a little more suburban, it's a little more Hamilton County, it's a little
more. Not by much.
Yeah. Not by much, but a little bit more. Yeah. So that could be a wrinkle.
Does this make up for Siebold's late start?
Well, I don't think it makes up for his late start, but you can't deny the momentum that he's got going for him. And I think that when you get to the end of, or to the election in May, I think it'll be a four-person race, and it'll be a pretty contested race. I think he's got a good shot.
All right, here's another interesting endorsement in the 5th District. David McIntosh has the backing of Indiana Right to Life. McIntosh says that if he's elected, not only will he work to defund Planned Parenthood, but he would also like to repeal the Affordable Health Care Act.
Would I fund Planned Parenthood? No. Would I stand up and make sure these regulations are overturned? Yes.
I really wish politicians would finally decide their job is to put Hoosiers back to work so that our people here in Indiana aren't making choices between rent and food and health care.
Betty Cockrum of Planned Parenthood there. John Ketzenberger, is McIntosh the most conservative candidate in that race?
I'd say so, absolutely. And I think that's where we go back to the endorsements that we saw for Wayne Siebold. Those are people who have very conservative credentials of their own. But I still think that as individuals, McIntosh is clearly the most conservative in the field.
And that's a message. If you go to his website, for instance, you look at some of the endorsements and some of the accolades that have been put on there by various groups, they make no bones about the fact that he has gotten into scraps with any number of Republicans. I mean, they take on Newt Gingrich and how he butted heads with him when Gingrich was in Congress, and this Republican and that Republican. It's sort of a scorched earth approach in terms of showing how, as John says, just how conservative he is within a pack of conservative candidates.
Here's a guy who, when you talk about what you find on his website, he's been endorsed by FreedomWorks, who's going after Dick Lugar and part of the residency challenge there. But McIntosh lives in Virginia. And, I mean, what's going on when you got a group that's trying to take out a sitting senator on a residency issue and then supporting a guy who hasn't lived here since he served in Congress in the 90s?
I can't answer that question. I have no idea.
I can.
I'm not surprised. Well, I'm not surprised that Right to Life would endorse David McIntosh. I think that David McIntosh may be the only one running of all the people running in this district who's ever served in a legislative body where he'd have to vote on issues related to this issue. So I'm pretty sure that was an easy endorsement for Right to Life. And this is a very conservative district and a very pro-life district, so this will probably play well there.
Do you want to be the most conservative candidate?
Well, I don't think you have to be the most conservative, but I think you have to do your bona fides there. And he's in a situation where he's got a good commercial on now, a good biographical commercial. In fact, I like all of the commercials. Susan Brooks has a good one on right now, and so does David. And Siebold's coming out with one. Starting, I think, Monday, where he's rollerblading the district, which is pretty different, which will be fun. And look for McGough to be on the air shortly. So they're going to be out there the rest of the way with some pretty powerful stuff.
Best race in the primary.
Probably the best race, certainly the most interesting race in the primary. But what's interesting about that is he also garnered some endorsements himself. He got from the radical right part of the party, of the conservative radical wingnut part of the party. You had Scott Schneider and you had Cindy Noe, both endorsing him. And I assume that we'll also see attacks on the Girl Scouts, and besides Planned Parenthood, it'll be on birth control and working men and women. And they don't seem to realize the impact of not having health care on working people, working Janes and Joes out there, and also on small business people who have to get health care coverage. So, you know, they can all say, because one of them is going to wind up in Congress. And you know what? Mm-hmm. They may have a pre-existing condition, but you know what? They'll get health care. So they don't care about the rest of us as long as they're covered. And that's the basic bottom line here.
I mean, this is the most obvious statement, but it really will depend on who shows.
You don't need to say it.
Then I will go ahead anyway, though. So, I mean, it all comes down to which group's going to show up come May 8th. Sure. Because you look at the motivation of to get people to the ballot box, and if you're a Murdoch fan, for instance, you're angry, you want to go prove something. That may be the same constituency that David McIntosh is able to tap. Yeah, into that district.
Jim's point on that is good. It is difficult for them to straddle that line, attacking Lugar for abandoning Indiana when David McIntosh did the same thing.
No, I'm just making the point that
they were going to move back after that campaign.
Well, he doesn't have a residency problem because he's got a house in Anderson. But
he's going to live in Muncie. That's where they wanted to live. I heard him.
His job's in Washington, D.C.
It just comes down. You don't know which faction of the Republican Party is going to show up. But history suggests it's going to be the most radical or most angry portion, and that's probably the most conservative faction.
You want to be the most conservative.
I guess.
We'll find out. Should Indiana return to a one-class state basketball tournament? IHSAA Commissioner Bobby Cox announced that he and State Senate Republican Mike Delf will hold a series of 11 town meetings across the state over the next 6 weeks to ask that question. Hoosiers will have a chance to speak their minds and vote on whether they'd like to seek a return to single-class basketball. Senator Delf is hoping for a big turnout in support of a cause that he says is crucial to Indiana.
We need to respect the fact that basketball is a sport unlike any other sport in the state of Indiana, and it's part of our state identity, and I think that needs to be respected.
There are the nostalgics of the world, and I'm one of those that love the old days and remember the good old days. But we at the association, our duty and our task is to serve the membership. But I think there are a lot of parents out there that like where their kids are right now and what they're playing in and the opportunities that multiple classes have provided to those schools.
Bobby Cox there. John Schwanis, will this effort produce change?
I don't know. I think the best clue is what the commissioner just said about the duty is to the membership. Those are the principles.
And they've spoken on this a couple of times.
Overwhelmingly that they like this because it gives kids more opportunities.
More champions.
More champions, absolutely. And now you have the governor weighing in who said, you know, basically initially I was a supporter of single class basketball and thought it was a mistake to go the other direction, but he's changed his tune and thinks that because of the disparity of school sizes and so forth, that the existing system is probably the best.
More champions.
If a champion is crowned and no one is there to see it, does it really happen?
That's a good
They've
point.
They've had some attendance problems.
They've had a lot of attendance problems. Now, I'm not saying that's a reason to change back to a single class, but I think that it has diluted the value of a championship from the public's perspective, and I think that has meant that fewer people are paying attention to the tournament. And, you know, that's really the bread and butter for the IHSA and a lot of those
schools.
I don't
disagree with you. I think you're right. The excitement level would maybe return perhaps somewhat to the days when you could get a million people when you combine the tournaments.
That day may be gone.
Well, that day may be gone. But the other issue here that is just what role does government have? And that's what you're hearing a lot of people saying. This is a private, not-for-profit entity.
They're using government-supported schools.
But still, you get the legislative oversight.
It's tough to keep the government out of there. But the legislature's taken this on a couple of times without success.
Right.
Will this, if nothing else, do you think if they hold 11 town hall meetings and the decision is to leave things the way they are, will this go away?
It'll never go away. It's like daylight savings time. But I'd rather see Mike Delf doing this than all the war on women that he's been involved in. So that's good. But let me give you a clue. This will change when hell freezes over. And if he gets it done, that'll be his legacy.
So you're saying if Kentucky wins this weekend, it'll happen?
Should there
be what, the eighth time?
Yeah.
That hell froze over?
Yeah.
Should there be one class basketball?
Oh, I think there should be one class basketball, but I don't think it's going to change. I think Ann's right about that. I think the more years we're away from one class basketball and the more champions that have been crowned, and the more small towns get to put a banner at the edge of town that says state champion, the less likely the 408 principals are going to go back to one class system. The last time they did a survey on this was in 2006, and 10% of the principals voted for a one class system.
Yeah.
This is not going to change. And for the very reason we've stated.
Spoken like the guy who held George McGinnis to how many points?
46.
There you go.
Yeah, and Mike Delft's school won a championship.
And you know what? I give Mike credit for trying to do
he's
something.
He's a Carmel High grad.
And well, listening, and he's going to go out and do 11 of these.
And the IHSAA for doing it.
Yeah.
I think this
yeah,
is
I
the
thought
right
they
approach.
Handled it beautifully.
Look, he's staying out of trouble. It's perfect.
You know. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should Indiana return to one-class basketball? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, try two classes instead. Last week's question was, should the Indiana youth group get its specialty plate returned? 67% said yes, 31% said no, 2% said do away with all of the specialty plates. To take part in the poll, just go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The Indiana Libertarian Party held its state convention this week and selected Rupert Bonham as the party's candidate for governor of Indiana. The fan favorite from CBS's Survivor Series was unopposed for the Libertarian nomination. Bonham will face Republican Mike Pence and Democrat John Gregg in the governor's race. The Libertarians chose Brad Klopfenstein to be his running mate. Andrew Horning returns as the nominee for U.S. Senate. And Delaney, will Rupert perform better than previous Libertarian candidates?
Well, he'll probably do a little bit better, since I assume that there are the followers out there that admire his survivor instincts. I think it's interesting that Andrew Horning's back in Indiana. I was thinking that perhaps he could get a post office box he could share with Dan Coats and Richard Lugar and David McIntosh to give them all residency within the state. That'd be good.
He moved to Texas for a little while, came back. But he's, I mean, how many times has he run for statewide office now? The Libertarian Party.
Lost count.
The Libertarian Party tends to recycle this. I mean, Rupert's
there's only
some,
there's only 10 of them. So, I mean, they got to keep coming every so many years.
Rupert's something different.
Look, Rupert's got a big heart. And I think the guy really wants to continue to do good things for people on a bigger stage. But the problem's going to be when he's put on the stage next to Mike Pence and John Gregg, and people realize that he doesn't understand government, doesn't have the experience and the breadth of understanding that both of those candidates do, he's going to look pretty bad. And that's too bad, because I think he'll find out in a hurry that a statewide campaign for governor is going to be tougher than anything he ever did on Survivor, when you got to grind it out day in and day out and
that's
do the
right.
things you got to do. And it's going to show up that he's not ready, that he's probably in over his head, and that's too bad, because I think the guy does have a big heart, and I think he's got the best of intentions.
But he probably will get more votes because of the celebrity factor.
The Libertarians think he's their answer to Jesse Ventura.
Oh.
He doesn't.
Let me just go back. I think he will get more votes than some of the previous nominees. Because of the celebrity factor, people are going to recognize the name. They'll say, oh, that's the guy I enjoyed watching every week on during primetime. He's got my vote.
There are clearly more than 10 Libertarians in the state, and he'll get the 1% that the Libertarian Party typically gets in Indiana, and he'll have the experience of a campaign under his belt.
And he can do a reality show about it.
Yeah, maybe.
Actually, that's maybe the wager to make. I mean, you think he's doing this for ulterior reasons?
I don't know. I mean, you look at this and you say that regardless of how hard he works, he has a snowball's chance, okay? And so then you wonder why he's doing it. And maybe he just is, you know, philosophically attuned and wants the libertarian view out there.
Yeah.
Or maybe he's looking ahead to some future employment, and I got to think it's got to be the latter.
You know, the Libertarians think they get slighted. They think that they deserve to have equal standing with Republicans and Democrats in a number of forums, including maybe this one. Are they slighted?
They've yet to produce a number of votes that would put them on an equal par with the Republicans and Democrats. I mean, until they get anywhere near closer than where they are now, then they're not being slighted. They're just not generating many supporters.
We do have automatic ballot access at this point, where they have to get 2% in the Secretary of State's race. So,
right.
I mean, that would be the key. If they weren't able to maintain that, then it becomes a lot more challenging for them to wage any kind of campaign.
Finally, Indianapolis has some new public art this week. It's a large sculpture named Life Evolving. It's a 40-foot-high metal sculpture of RNA, I'm not sure I can say the scientific name. It's created by retired scientist turned artist Biagio Azzarelli. Scientists believe that a single strand of RNA was the biological building block of Earth's primitive life forms. Life Evolving is a project of Eli Lilly and Company, Keep Indianapolis Beautiful, Inc., and NDOT. It's all part of a project to make Indianapolis more beautiful. Mike McDaniel, does that make Indianapolis more beautiful?
Absolutely. You know, every great city has a lot of great public art, and we should all be thankful to Eli Lilly and Company for being willing to do that in one of the major corridors into our city. And there's a lot more of that to be done here, and hopefully they'll continue to do that through the years.
Yeah, they shut down a highway to...
That's okay. They shut down the highway for lots of different reasons. But, you know, I just hope that that means that the Republicans aren't going to picket it because, you know, you could make an argument that it's against creationism there's evolution here. Michael.
I thought after looking at it, if you stood next to it, it might help you get back to the mothership.
Oh, my.
That is a personal attack.
Oh, my.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat and the lady, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the 1,000 and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.